The following program is pre-recorded.
Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. On November 3rd, hundreds of thousands of voters will head to the polls in north central Wisconsin to choose the next president of the United States. But there's more than a presidential election at stake. Dozens of seats in the state legislature are also up for grabs. Candidates who win will help shape Wisconsin's future, making policy decisions about our taxes, our schools, our health care, and more. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. As part of our mission to offer balanced election coverage, we invited candidates from both parties in several races to join us for a conversation about their background, their views, and their top priorities for representing their district in Madison if elected. Today is the first in a series of candidate conversations where each candidate answers seven identical questions. First, we'll hear from the candidates for Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District, starting with Republican Scott Soik, followed by incumbent Democrat Katrina Shankland. Then we'll take a look at the race for Wisconsin's 14th Senate District with Democrat Joni Anderson and Republican Joan Balwig. Finally, we'll hear from Wisconsin Public Radio Rural Communities reporter Rob Menser for an overview of key races in our area. Joining us now on Route 51 is Scott Soik, the Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District. Mr. Soik is challenging incumbent Katrina Shankland for the seat. Mr. Soik, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. Greatly appreciate it.
So let's start by having you tell us about yourself. So what's your background and why did you decide to run for office?
Good question. Thank you. I am a small business owner. I am a husband, a father. I've got three boys, 13, 15, and 17. I grew up here in Portage County. I actually live in the home that I grew up in. I graduated high school, Stevens Point, entered the United States Marine Corps in 1993, served till 1997, went to Colorado School of Trades after that, and came back in 2002, started a small business, and have been here ever since, and have always tried to stay engaged in local politics and just helping out the community.
Well, great. COVID-19 and the government's response to it really are at the top of everyone's mind. So I ask, how do you feel about the job the legislature and the government have done so far? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
I would like to see hard numbers on how we're going to move forward. We keep hearing that this is a pandemic, and I believe COVID is real. I believe COVID is serious, but I also believe that in order for us to govern the best possible way at our local levels with our school districts, our township, our county, we need the hard numbers of what this actually looked like. We've all seen in the past where we had a flu outbreak in one of the area schools, and we have 30 to 40% of our students out of that school. They close the school for 2 to 3 days, do a deep cleaning, and bring the students back. What is going to be the hard numbers that we can work off of? That would be the biggest thing on my mind, is an actual standard set moving forward.
Well, expanding on that a little bit, where do you think that information should come from? Who do you think should supply that information?
Well, if the legislature and the governor are going to take this on and fight this, they need to get in contact with the experts. They need to come to a consensus together and give us the hard numbers that we can distribute out to our counties and let our county health departments and our county boards and our school boards come together at the county level and decide what is going to be best for that each and individual county.
Certainly, the pandemic has resulted in unprecedented economic challenges. Lost revenue will have a significant impact on the state's budget. And the latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and infrastructure, for example. So if elected, how do you propose to deal with those state budget shortfalls that are projected?
Well, when we have budget shortfalls in our homes and in our businesses, we have to look at making the cut where we can. There are going to be some things in the short term that we may have to give up in order to get us through out to the other side. We are going to have tremendous shortfalls, and we're going to have that at the county levels, the township levels. And every municipality needs to start looking at that now and getting ready for when that happens. So next year, when it does come in that there's a shortfall of funds, that they're not taken off guard. We need to start now preparing for that.
You're a small business owner, and of course, small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic and the economic downturn. How can the state best help those struggling to recover?
They can let us open back up. They can give us those guidelines that we were talking about earlier, those hard numbers, not open-ended statements. They can give us the hard numbers. They can let us open back up and start moving forward with what is best for our businesses and our families. Personal accountability, personal responsibility. Every small business owner, every farmer understands what that means.
So what are your top two priorities in representing the district in Madison?
My top two would be education. I have three boys in the education system right now. Education is very important, a well-rounded education. The fact that they get to go to school, they get to participate and be a part of something. We need to bring back our sports, our after-school activities, whether it's drama, play, choir. We need to get our young children back involved in these things in the greatest numbers possible. Because if we don't, we end up losing them. And they're our most valuable resource in the state is our young people. And the more we can keep them engaged, keep them active in the school setting, is going to be the best way moving forward long term.
And what about your second priority? I mean, education, absolutely. But what other what's your next priority?
The local level, the rural areas. We need to start keeping more of our money at home in our local township and in our county. When we have natural disasters, we have to be able to have the funds and resources available immediately to move forward. And we know at the local level what's best for us. You know, if we have to wait for the money to come down, that means we have people waiting to get their power back on because we don't have the roads cleared, because we don't have the equipment, or we don't have the funds. So if we can get to the point where we can keep more of our money locally, we're going to be better off throughout the whole state.
In 2016, Scott, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. But in that same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
So, simple. I run a small business. When I'm elected, my small business will be idled down. I have a desk I'm sitting at right now in this conversation with you. My door is open. My phone is on. I will take the conversation from anybody in the district that wants to come out here and have a conversation with me. This is so important that we represent everybody in our district and that we're willing to have the conversation with everybody we represent. And I believe by staying home, staying in my office and having that open door policy, I will be able to not only reach out, but have people reach out to me and we'll be able to get things done.
Is there anything we haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on? Anything you'd like voters to know about you?
I want voters to know that I used to sit here because I run a small business. I run a gun shop. I build long-range rifles and competition handguns. And the normal clientele that walks in the door is very like-minded with me. I used to believe that I was right of center. And during this path on this campaign trail, I have found out and realized I am closer to the center than I even ever thought I was. I've talked to people left of center. I've talked to people in the center. I've talked to people right of center. We all want the same things for our community. We just can't get on the same page and agree on how we get those same things. And that is what's so important about having the open door policy and being willing to talk to everyone you represent.
You're listening to special election coverage with Scott Soik, the Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District. Mr. Soik is challenging incumbent Katrina Shankland for the seat. Mr. Soik, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it. And I want to just put one last shout out to your listeners. The time is now to come back to the center, elect Scott Soik, and take back local control of our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Soik. Coming up next, we'll hear from Katrina Shankland as our special election coverage continues. I'm Shereen Seewert, and this is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now on Route 51 is Katrina Shankland, the Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District. Ms. Shankland is the incumbent. She is being challenged by Republican Scott Soik. Representative Shankland, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start by having you tell us about yourself. What's your background and why are you hoping to be reelected?
Sure. So since 2013, I've had the honor and privilege of representing Portage County in the Wisconsin State Assembly, and I ran to be a voice for Central Wisconsin and championed more opportunities for Central Wisconsin families. One of my greatest concerns that I've always worked on in the legislature is making sure everyone can have access to clean water. I've also been working very hard on ensuring everyone has access to high-quality public education at all levels, including technical colleges and universities. And I've always supported good-paying, family-supporting jobs, investing in our infrastructure like roads, bridges, and broadband, and making sure that there are strong opportunities for everyone in Central Wisconsin and beyond. So I'm running to continue that work, and in the time since I decided to run for reelection, we have had a global pandemic completely affect our quality of life and the many challenges we're facing in Wisconsin. And so now I'm running on top of the issues I just talked about to also address the economic recovery and the many public health concerns that are the result of the COVID-19 pandemic.
And I will ask you about those economic challenges in a moment, but certainly COVID-19, the government's response to it, at the top of everyone's mind. So how do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done so far? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's response?
So first of all, the legislature met in April to address the state's COVID-19 response through bipartisan legislation, and I was proud to vote for it. As I said at the time, it was a great first step, but we have to continue working. And what I'm disappointed about is months later, at the height of the pandemic and the height of the unemployment crisis, the legislature has not come back in to address the concerns that I've been hearing from constituents. And that includes, I've personally had to help and was happy to help constituents who have had issues with evictions and who haven't had their unemployment benefits as a result of the pandemic. And so how can we address the state's economic recovery without the legislature convening? I would like us to convene. I would like us to provide grants, emergency grants, to families like my constituents who have been struggling and who, in some cases, were at risk of being evicted or who were evicted. I also believe we need to be addressing the state's pandemic response when it comes to providing more resources to the public schools and universities across the state that are either reopening in the next week or two or have already opened. And so we need to do a lot more in terms of the legislature, and I have been calling on my colleagues not only to hold public hearings, but to work with me and others who have asked to address these concerns head on. I don't believe we should wait until January when the new legislative session begins. Secondly, I would say, you know, the governor has marshaled $2 billion in federal resources and created many grant programs like the rental assistance program to address some of the concerns I mentioned. And those were great initiatives. The only challenge is that money runs out, but people continue to be in financial crisis and sometimes in health crisis at the same time. We need a stronger response, and I lay that on the legislature. Again, we could have been meeting this whole time, and we need to do more. So I certainly want to see further action on this.
So let's talk about those economic challenges. Lost revenue will have a significant impact on the state's budget. And the latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and for infrastructure, for example. How do you propose to deal with that state budget shortfall?
Yeah, so number one, the HEROES Act was passed by the United States House of Representatives in May. And the HEROES Act would provide a sincere financial stimulus package, which would help families, especially those who are unemployed, as well as state and local governments and schools. So I believe first and foremost, we need to keep pushing the federal government, which has much greater leeway in terms of borrowing than the state government, to get that financial stimulus out there. And that stimulus package would not only provide $600 a week in unemployment benefits for those who find themselves unemployed through no fault of their own right now, it would also support our state and local governments with additional funds, which is frankly what we need. In the absence of that, there are many ways that we can look at the budget shortfalls. And Governor Evers has already been doing that by announcing two different lapses of general purpose revenue in order to what it essentially does is it lapses back some of the money that was appropriated through the 2019-2020 budget, and it puts it back into the coffers. Or I should say, you know, we just don't spend that money. I think in addition to that, we need to look at taking the Medicaid expansion, which would save at least $304 million over the next 2 years, cover 80,000 more people with health insurance at a time when they certainly need access to quality health care and insurance. And that $304 million could be reinvested in the pandemic response in many programs that I already mentioned related to emergency grants and supporting families who are unemployed. So I think there are definitely options on the table, but my first preference, and one that I think the American people are watching very closely, is to ask Congress to work for us, and we need the United States Senate to take up the HEROES Act. And if they can't get there, then they need to compromise and meet somewhere in the middle. And it looks like, you know, they're asking for the middle compromise would be a $2 trillion stimulus package. This is pretty similar to how the nation responded in the 2008-2009 financial crisis. And I think we need a federal response first.
All right. Small businesses and farmers, especially hard hit by the pandemic, how can the state best help those struggling to recover now?
Yeah, so I want to encourage farmers to apply for the state's Farm Support Program, which uses $50 million in federal funds and provides them a grant because they are struggling. And in terms of small businesses, the state had a whirlwind grant. I was just shopping on Main Street in Stevens Point and found out one of our local businesses on Main Street got a $2,500 whirlwind grant, and that's fantastic. But we need to continue those programs, and that's what I'm pushing for. I co-sponsored a bipartisan bill to double the financial support available to our small businesses across Wisconsin, and I'm very committed to helping them weather through these challenges. I've personally helped them apply for PPP loans, and I support those as well on the federal level. I believe we need an all-hands-on-deck approach to protecting our small businesses and our farmers during this difficult time.
So we have about 2 minutes left and three questions to go. So just very briefly, these last three questions. What are your top two priorities in representing the district in Madison?
My top two priorities, everyone knows that I care about clean water, and I have some unfinished business in Madison. I passed 10 bipartisan clean water bills unanimously through the Assembly, but we have to get them through the Senate. So I want to push those bills across that final hurdle and get them done so everyone can have access to clean water. And then the pandemic response. This is on everyone's mind right now. I want to make sure every family has their needs covered and that we are providing a strong, robust response on the state level so that they can rest assured whether it's an economic crisis, a health crisis, or both, we will be there for them.
In 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. In the same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
I believe very strongly in bipartisanship and getting results. And in the legislature, I've introduced more bills than any member of the state assembly, two-thirds of which were bipartisan. This session, I also led the charge on clean water and worked across the aisle and in both houses. I'm proud of my record of getting results, and I believe that that speaks to the need to not be, not having to choose in terms of we can all work together regardless of our values or our ideology, and I want people to know regardless of where they live, regardless of their zip code, regardless of who they voted for, I will fight for them. We have a public health crisis. We have an economic crisis. We have many issues that need to be addressed in Madison, and I'm running to be your voice, regardless of who you vote for. It's been an honor to serve the people of Central Wisconsin, and I'm going to continue fighting for them.
And just a few seconds left. Is there anything we haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on?
I'm doing everything possible to campaign as safely as possible during this pandemic. I've heard from many people who are concerned about the spread of COVID-19. So I want to encourage people to reach out if they have any questions about me. I'm hosting virtual events and doing what I can to reach out to people, usually via phone, but also the United States Postal Service. And I'm looking forward to communicating with people as safely as possible during this pandemic and encourage them to reach out if they ever have any questions or need any assistance.
You're listening to special election coverage with Katrina Shankland, the Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District. Ms. Shankland is the incumbent. She is being challenged by Republican Scott Soik. Representative Shankland, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Coming up next, we'll hear from candidates in the race for Wisconsin's 14th Senate District, Democrat Joni Anderson and Republican Joan Balwick, part of our special election coverage. I'm Shereen Seewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now on Route 51 is Joni Anderson, the Democrat facing off with Republican candidate Joan Balwick for Wisconsin's 14th Senate District. Republican Senator Luther Olson currently holds the seat, but announced earlier this year he would not seek another term. Ms. Anderson, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome.
So tell us about yourself. What's your background and why are you running for office?
Well, I'm running for the people. My background is I worked in a factory for the last 27 years over in the state of Wisconsin, an auto parts factory. And I was a union member there, a union officer. I was president. I was an elected member of the safety committee, vice president, a steward. I held numerous offices over the year. I was also an elected member of UE's Western Regional Council, which extends from Ohio to California. So my background is labor and workers, and that's where my platform led me.
So, well, COVID-19 and the government's response to it are at the top of everyone's mind these days. How do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done so far? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
I support the governor's mandate on masks. I do not think the COVID-19 is under control. I think the legislature should be taking the issues more seriously, you know, instead of playing around and doing politicking around everything. Schools absolutely should not, the students and teachers should not be forced to go back to school. The funding should be there for virtual learning so that no student is left behind. Because if our school, if our teachers and our students and the parents do not feel comfortable with their kids in school in this type of situation, they should be able to learn from home and not be forced.
And what do you see the state's role in that? And what do you think the legislature should do to help make that a reality?
Funding. And we also need broadband funding. We need safe funding for if the kids are going to be in school, they need funding for safety precautions, the cleaning, the deep cleaning. They need the people to be able to be there to make sure this happens. And I don't think that the legislature has put that funding forward.
Well, the pandemic has resulted in significant economic challenges with lost revenue that will have an impact on the state's budget for some time. The latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and for infrastructure, for example. If you're elected, how do you propose to deal with state budget shortfalls as they are projected now?
I really don't think that the budget, I think there's ways that they can save the money and put it where it really needs to be, like the school funding. There are numerous ways that our legislature could put money into school funding. And I'm talking public schools now. I'm not talking private schools.
Okay.
I'm talking public schools. That's where we need the funding. And that's where the funding should be put. Should not be directed to the public schools. It should be in the private schools. It should be in the public area. And there are different ways that you can take money from transportation. You can also legalize medicinal and recreational marijuana, and we could take advantage of those tax dollars.
Small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic and economic downturn. So how can the state best help those struggling to recover?
Instead of giving money to large corporations, that money can be directed into the state, the small businesses where they really need the help to get back on their feet. I know of a couple of places just in Adams that are just struggling, a couple that couldn't. That applied for small business loans and could not get them because the money was not directed to the right places.
So you see more state aid or federal aid as the answer?
Both.
What about farmers especially? We've seen a record number of bankruptcies for Wisconsin farmers that are really struggling. What do you think the state should do to help them?
They need their prices. They need fair pricing. And they also need... They need the support from the state with the pricing and with the trade laws, the tariff. We don't need the tariff. That's affecting the farmers in Wisconsin, too.
So what are your top two priorities in representing the district in Madison if you're elected?
Top two priorities?
Mm-hmm.
We need jobs. In Wisconsin, manufacturing jobs there's a lot of small manufacturing jobs in Wisconsin, and we need those to stay here because just in our area alone, I can say in Adams, Juneau, Sauk, there are probably 1,000 jobs in small manufacturing. And if we don't help those jobs stay here, they're going to go away, and they're family supporting jobs. They're not $7, $8 an hour. My other top priority is healthcare. We need healthcare in this state. We don't need a system. The system's broken, and it needs to be fixed so that all people have healthcare.
How do you propose that the state fix the healthcare situation? Does that mean an expansion of Medicaid? What do you see happening?
The expansion of Medicaid needs to happen. We need like Badger Care for All, and that would mean the taxes would need to be revamped. But we need support from all areas of the legislature because people should not be paying, anywhere from $4,000 to $10,000 in out-of-pocket funds. They shouldn't be paying $5,000 copays. They shouldn't have to worry about losing their home when they retire because they get sick.
In 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. And in that same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
The basic needs of a lot of people in the state are not being met by our legislators. So we need people down in Madison that are willing to work to raise the wages in Wisconsin, especially the minimum wage. $7.25 an hour is just absolutely ridiculous in this day and time. We need, like I stated earlier, we need family-supporting jobs, not where people have to go out and work two or three jobs just to make ends meet. And we need health care. That would help a lot of people when it came to how well off they were. The Trump versus Biden, people just need to look at how their needs are actually being met.
Joni, is there anything we haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on? Just one last brief question for you.
I think the working people are one of the most important parts of this state, and they need to be made to be felt important.
Thank you. You're listening to special election coverage with Joni Anderson, the Democrat facing off with Republican candidate Joan Balwig for Wisconsin's 14th Senate District. Republican Senator Luther Olson currently holds the seat. He announced earlier this year he would not seek another term. Ms. Anderson, thank you so much for being here today. Coming up next, we'll hear from Joan Balwig as our special election coverage continues. I'm Shereen Seewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now on Route 51 is Joan Balwig, a Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 14th Senate District. It's a seat currently held by Republican Senator Luther Olson. Senator Olson announced in February he will not seek re-election. Ms. Balwig will face off against Democrat Joni Anderson for the seat in the November election. Ms. Balwig, thank you for being here today.
Happy to be with you and your listeners.
So let's start off by just telling us about yourself. What's your background and why are you running for office?
Well, I've been in the legislature for the last eight terms as the Republican state representative for the 41st district, business owner with my husband of a farm equipment dealership for 44 years, living in Barkazan. And before I got into the state legislature, I was actually a mayor and on the city council. So it's just something that kind of developed from being a business owner in a small community. You get involved in many, many things. And so that's how that developed from working with our local chamber, our local community as mayor, local hospital board member, and so on to go to the legislature. And I thought that filling in for Senator Olson would be the next step to benefit the people of the district.
COVID-19 and the government's response to it are certainly at the top of everyone's mind. So how do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done? As you mentioned, you are part of the legislature now. So what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
Well, unfortunately, there hasn't been a lot of cooperation between the governor and the legislature. The CARES Act money that came through, of course, was by state law. It was up to the governor to spend that money. I respect the governor's ability through emergency declaration for the 60 days that he did the original declaration. And that we have had some really good information that has come out from DHS, of course, on the federal side, CDC, and then from our Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, how to reopen safely. And I do believe that so far that has been doing okay.
Well, the pandemic has resulted in some unprecedented economic challenges. Lost revenue will certainly have a significant impact on the state's budget. The latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and for infrastructure, for example. So if elected, how do you propose to deal with a state budget shortfall?
Well, this next budget year, of course, is as is. What we're talking about is what are we going to do next spring and summer in development of the new budget. We'll have better handle then on exactly where our revenue projections are. And if there's going to be any further stimulus packages from the federal government, I think that is the thing we need to take a look at first, how those federal dollars are going to come to us. Now, of course, support for municipalities and schools is a separate bucket than from transportation. And I know transportation revenues have taken a big hit with people not traveling and going to work. So that's going to be a separate allocation we're going to have to take a look at. And hopefully there will be some additional federal stimulus, but we'll have to look at this realistically come the next budget.
Well, small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic and the economic downturn. How do you think the state can best help those struggling to recover?
Well, they have been coming up, actually. The price of milk has been up. The price of corn has been coming up. I do believe that the trade deals that have come about with the USMCA and taking a better look in what's happening with our trading partners in China has been looking up for everyone. Of course, farming is cyclical when it comes to crops. As far as weather, it's just not trade. On the good side, there is a reduced cost of production because of the lower fuel prices and those kinds of things. So I think so far we have been putting some money just where it belongs, and we have used some of that CARES Act money that has gone directly to our farmers as well as direct federal stimulus that has also done that.
We are seeing a record number of bankruptcies among farmers in Wisconsin. Do you think more needs to be done?
Well, those bankruptcies have been slowing down, especially since the dairy has been coming back. There always is in any business, the business that I'm in. We've seen that over the years, too, that there is consolidation that goes on. So we need to take a look at making sure that we're helping those folks. One of the bills that I promoted last year through my suicide task force actually was to try to promote fiscal planning and grants for farmers to make sure that they are better prepared once they're getting in the business, while they're in the business. We need people to realize that there is help out there, not only through their local banks and credit providers, but DebtCap has a wonderful program for helping farmers planning financially.
So what are your top two priorities in representing the district in Madison?
Well, I think to continue doing what I've always thought was probably the most important thing, which was listening to the people of the district, providing great constituent services, as indicated by so many people that we've helped that were unable to connect on their justly deserved unemployment compensation payments, working with people like that, making sure that if people are interacting with state government and they're not sure how to do that or not getting an answer that they understand, work as an advocate for those individuals. But then on the legislative side, to see that government stays out of everybody's way and to continue to keep looking at rules and regulations that impede what businesses and individuals are able to do in their own lives.
In 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. But in that same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising anyone?
Well, I am an individual who serves the people in the district of rural Wisconsin, and that isn't going to change from the assembly district to the Senate district. So I do believe that I need to advocate for Wisconsinites in rural areas. There aren't a lot of us. That is not the general portion of the population in Wisconsin, but that is where my emphasis is, and I want to be sure to bring that voice to Madison.
One last question briefly. Is there anything we haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on right now?
I think that just making sure that people are aware that we need to work together through the COVID situation. I think that getting kids back to school is going to be very important for many reasons. First of all, for the well-being of those students, they need to be with their peers. It is a better type of education if the majority of kids can be there face-to-face. As a former elementary teacher myself, I know that there's a lot more than goes on in a classroom than just talking about reading and writing and math. So I do believe that trying to get our kids back to school face-to-face safely will be imperative for the education of those young people and for their general well-being.
You're listening to special election coverage with Joan Balwig, a Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 14th Senate District. This is a seat currently held by Republican Senator Luther Olson. Senator Olson announced in February he will not seek re-election. Ms. Balwig will face off against Democrat Joni Anderson for the seat in the November election. Ms. Balwig, thank you so much for being here today.
And thank you for the opportunity. Have a great day.
Joining us now is Wisconsin Public Radio Rural Communities reporter Rob Menser with a look at the issues at the forefront of this election. Rob, thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you for inviting me.
So what have you been working on? What's at the top of voters' minds right now?
Well, there is this pandemic. I don't know if you've heard about this, but this is, there's not much that's higher on voters' minds than COVID-19 and the effects that it's having on daily lives. And I think probably the largest case of that is what's going to happen with schools this fall. That is obviously dominating a lot of people's thinking. Some schools are all virtual, some are a mix of virtual, and this is like and some are all in person. And this is obviously the thing that probably has the most effect on people's everyday lives, especially for parents, but not only for parents, to be honest, as the school year begins.
Mm-hmm. So what is the state of public opinion in Wisconsin? How do you think that's going to play out in relative to the races in our region?
So there are things we know. I'm always very interested in the Marquette poll, Marquette University Law School, that puts out a high quality poll. And their poll for August showed some interesting things about public opinion in Wisconsin that I think are relevant to the fall elections, right? So first, there's a sort of top line of the poll is Joe Biden is leading Donald Trump in Wisconsin by about 5 points among likely voters. And this matters because the top of the ticket, it really filters down to state level races and all these, assembly races to a large extent. They depend on turnout from partisans who are there for the top of the ticket. When it comes to issues, There are a couple of interesting findings. One thing, the at the state level, in the state legislature, or among state legislators, the governor's mask mandate has been a huge topic of debate. There was an initial push to take a vote to repeal that mandate, and that that appears to have fallen off. But what we know about the mask mandate is that it is incredibly popular. It is overwhelmingly popular in the state of Wisconsin. That's according to this poll. 69% of respondents agreed that masks should be required in all public places. Only 29% disagreed. And the way it breaks down is virtually all Democrats, more than 90% of Democrats, favor it. 5% disagree. Something like half and half of Republicans favor it, a little less than half of Republicans favor it, and then about 71% of independents favor it. So what it adds up to is really, really strong support for that mask mandate, which doesn't always look that way as you follow politics, but that's what the public opinion shows.
Does it differ from rural areas to more populated areas?
Some, but not greatly. The way it's broken down is, there's sort of like the Madison, Milwaukee, Fox Valley media markets, and then they break down the rest of the state. And the mandate had majority support in all parts of the state. The rest of the state still favored it more than half, but it was, that's still significantly less than, the highest favors, the places where there are the most Democrats and who are the most likely to favor the policy in Milwaukee and Madison.
So broad support for the mask mandate across the state. We now have this lawsuit that seeks to repeal the governor's mandate. So do you think that action will sway voters one way or the other, or is that not enough of a motivator for people?
Well, I think it's certainly significant that the legislature appears to have decided not to vote on this. The Republican leaders in the legislature made a push for it, and they backed off that push. If they had done that, there's a lot of evidence that that would have been a politically unpopular move. A lawsuit from an outside group, this Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, is this, conservative legal group. I don't know to what extent would voters, even if this lawsuit is successful, which is not a given, but even if it is, to what extent would voters associate that with the Wisconsin Republican Party? It seems like maybe they wouldn't. So I'm not sure that it will have that much of an effect. And it's probably in some ways intentional that that the sort of conservative establishment is challenging this in the court rather than in the legislature.
So we all know there's this lead of that Biden has right now. And if Biden has a lead among voters in Wisconsin, does that translate to an edge for Democratic candidates in the state legislature, or not necessarily?
It does. It makes a difference. However, the nature of the state assembly and other state level races, those districts are drawn in such a way that there really aren't that many competitive races. That is in part because of gerrymandering, and it is in part because of simple sort of demographic sorting. The fact that the Democrats in the state in huge numbers live in urban areas, and rural areas tend to be very much more Republican. So it does make a difference. It does have an effect. There are still some sort of swingy areas. The Fox Valley is one, for example, where the difference between a 5-point win by Joe Biden or a 1-point win by Biden or Trump probably does have the possibility of swinging some down ticket races. And then there are other places where it's just not that competitive, and it's just not that likely that it would take a blowout of the sort that no one is really predicting to really swing, for instance, the state assembly.
So polling, of course, has its limitations, as we've seen in the past. It's not always accurate. But what else from the Marquette poll stands out to you when you look at it now?
Well, You're right. There's limitations, absolutely, and you should not take any poll, certainly not any single poll, and not even sort of polling averages as like the gospel truth. What they are is they're the best evidence and data that we have to sort of know what public opinion looks like, and that has implications on politics. But yes, for sure, take it with a grain of salt. The other thing that really stands out to me, given recent events in Wisconsin, is the levels of support for the Black Lives Matter movement. What we saw in the Marquette poll is really interesting. In June, when the protest movement, the Black Lives Matter protest movement, was really nationwide at its height, the poll found 61% support for Black Lives Matter for protests in Wisconsin. And that was historic. That was the highest that has been measured, and honestly, like a remarkably high level of support for that movement. Surprising. What we saw in August was that really fell back down to earth in a big way and became a lot more polarized in the way that we're like accustomed to things looking in the United States right now. In the August poll, Marquette found 48% supported the Black Lives Matter movement, 48% opposed. And you better believe it splits on partisan lines as well. So that is that could have implications as protests continue. It is also possible that it swung once, it could swing again, it could swing the other way. I think that it does show that there's some volatility in public opinion around that issue, but it's like hard not to think about given what is going on in Wisconsin right now.
A lot to think about. Rob Menser, thank you for being here today.
Hey, thank you.
That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. I'd like to thank our guests, Wisconsin Public Radio Rural Communities reporter Rob Menser, Republican Scott Soik, and Democrat Katrina Shanklin, candidates for Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District, and Republican Joan Baldwig and Democrat Joni Anderson, candidates for Wisconsin's 14th Senate District. Our producer is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer, who is also our on-air producer today. Special thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we continue our special election coverage with candidates for Wisconsin's 24th Senate and 85th Assembly districts. Until then, we're heading out of town.